You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today and tomorrow, Friday, and all of next week except Tuesday for Tom. As many of you know, I told you yesterday, Tom is now in Germany as we speak, and he's working with an organization called Salem International, and it's an incredible, incredible organization. Tom's been doing a lot of volunteer work, he amongst other colleagues. And just in case you didn't catch it yesterday, let me tell you about Salem International. It is a non-denominational Christian not-for-profit welfare organization that was founded in 1957, quite a long time ago, Eric, before I was even born.
And myself, too.
Look at that. The guy's name was Gottfried Mueller, who is since deceased, but he and a circle of friends in Stuttgart started up this organization, and it is an incredible organization. It's from the name Hebrew. It's derived from Shalom, meaning peace. So all of these Salem projects are affiliated through the shared values of peace, helping those in need, and respect for life. So that's what Tom is doing right now. He's out with other colleagues of kindred spirits and more or less sharing stories about the organization, Salem International, what they do and how they help people in need throughout the entire world, the entire globe. So if you're more interested in learning about this, just go to saleminternational.org. That's S-A-L-E-M international.org, and you can find out more about it. So, Eric, we got a lot of good things to talk about today. As you know, it is the 45th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King and his death today, and
yes,
we have plenty of audio clips each and every year on my local radio show, usually on his birthday. I don't know why we choose it on his birthday. I guess you could do it on the birthday or you could do it on the death. But the birthday is actually a national holiday, though.
Right, and it's a much more happy experience.
Right. So, but in any case, this is the 45th year of his passing, and the question is, you know, what has changed, what has remained the same, and what is the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King? And I've collated throughout, you know, over a decade of being on talk radio, different audio clips of Dr. Martin Luther King, things that, you know, I'm sure some of it you've heard, but other things that you might not have heard. And I'll tell you, when you hear these other clips and you hear his actual voice and you hear his intonation and the rhythm and just the energy and the spirit with which he delivers these speeches, it's just incredible. To me, it's transforming. And despite the fact that I do this every single year, these clips still give me chills. They still make me sit down and reflect and really ponder about, you know, possibilities, how the world could become a better place, how we could achieve world peace one day, how we all are really God's children. We all are pretty much equal. And I always say that as a doctor, if I were to cut you open and I were to look inside of you, I'd looked at your liver or your lungs or your heart. I can't tell if you're black or white. I can't tell if you're gay or straight. I can't tell if you're a believer or if you're an atheist. I can't tell any of that, because the bottom line is we are all equal. And that is not only a dream of Martin Luther King, but it's a dream of many people throughout the history of mankind. And I'm always an optimist, Eric. I always think that, guess what? Eventually, we're going to get there. We're going to get to that nirvana at some point. But it's a struggle. It's not easy. You have to keep trying. You have to keep pushing. You can't accept defeat. You cannot be intimidated or bullied by people who believe in evil, who believe in discrimination, who believe in non-tolerance, who believe in people not having equal rights or individual liberty and freedom. And we talked about that a lot yesterday, particularly with the marriage equality issue. And look, it's still happening today. I'm going to tell you a story about Georgia and what's happening in Georgia. Believe it or not, Eric, in Georgia, there is a school out there that still, for all intents and purposes, does not condone a segregated prom.
Well, they want a segregated prom.
Right. The school doesn't actually finance it, and it's not on school premises. But each and every year, what they do is the white students, through their parents, the quote-unquote – remember we were talking about traditional values, how conservatives say they're always about tradition? Well, most of the traditions that they usually embrace are traditions that have to do with discrimination and inequality. Well, this so-called tradition in Georgia is such that the parents – finance an all-white prom. It's not on the school premises, but nonetheless, only the white students can go. And if an African-American or a minority student were to show up and try to attend the prom, there are threats of violence, bullying, even the police coming by to support the all-white prom and escorting, you know, the non-whites off the premise.
The unwanted.
The unwanted, yes, no doubt about it.
Undesirable.
So it's very sad to see stuff like that going on. But the point is, whenever we see that, we need to fight it. We totally need to fight it. We can't turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to that. And actually, this would be actually an opportune moment. Let me get this clip some here. Let me see here with Dr. Moore. I'll find it in a second. But he talks about that, how like injustice should not be tolerated, Eric. There should never be injustice anywhere, because if there is injustice somewhere, anywhere in the world, then guess what? That means there's injustice everywhere. So I'll get to a lot of these clips in a short minute, but let me give you the number for the Freedom Lines here, because I know a lot of people want to participate in today's program. We get a lot of callers who want to call in and express their point of view. And as I said, my style is, I don't care who you are. I don't care where you're from. I don't care if you're black, white, gay, straight, Democrat, independent, Republican, conservative, liberal. It doesn't matter. The whole point of talk radio is to be a forum where everybody, each individual, can get out there, speak openly in the public, and exchange ideas. And hopefully, after that exchange, you know, at least we'll have more common understanding, is my hope, and that at least we'll be able to, not necessarily to agree with everybody, but at least to respect somebody else's views and learn. And that's what freedom of liberty is about, right, Eric? To respect someone's view. You
Absolutely.
Don't have to embrace it, but you should never be forced.
Judgmental.
Right, or judged based off of what you're doing. So let me give you the number for the Freedom Lines, my friends. The number, 1-866-987-TOM. That's T-H-O-M, 1-866-987-8466. So, again, the common thread throughout today's program is going to be the 45th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and, obviously, his untimely death. You know, I thought when he died, Eric, I thought he must have been 50 or something like that. Do you know he died in his 30s?
Yes, I did know that.
I mean, I was shocked when I actually saw how young he really was. But the way that he spoke and the spirit and the way he moved people and being a catalyst for change, you almost thought this guy was like 60, 70, 80 years old with the wisdom that he had.
Right.
So I was absolutely shocked when I found out that Martin Luther King Jr. died in his 80s. So please feel free to give us a call. If you were alive during that time, if you remember Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., if you happened to
where walk, were you the day
yeah,
he got shot?
Where were you the day that he died and the day that he got shot? Share your story. Share your vision with the people and the public. I mean, it's just a great opportunity to do that. Tom's got a great audience. His audience is worldwide and obviously nationwide here, so I'm sure he's got representation from the South, from the Northeast, the Midwest,
and every age group.
And every age group. So don't be shy about sharing your stories here live on the Tom Hartman program. 1-866-987-THOM. That is the number. But let's pick up a few calls here too, because some people still want to get into the marriage issue that we talked about yesterday, Eric, the marriage equality issue. So let's get right to that and let's see who's first in the queue here. Let's go to Ed. He's in Palm Beach, Florida, and he's listening on Sirius XM Radio. Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think it's very apropos today that Martin Luther King's day, because the Senate, the state Senate of Florida, is voting to reform the alimony laws in the state of Florida, which allow for lifetime alimony, which is the equivalent of slavery for the married individual. So it's ironic that today is the day. And I thought it was interesting, you know, the gay community wants and desires so badly to be under the marriage laws of the heterosexual, and I can assure you I would much rather be under the gay marriage rules as they are today than being under the heterosexual marriage laws. They should be careful what they ask for.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because lifetime alimony. I don't know if you've ever talked to anybody that's been divorced and been completely shredded of their rights.
Oh, I got you.
Retirement. I mean, completely.
All right. I got you. Hey, listen, I'm up against the hard break, so I got to run. So listen, stay tuned, my friends. We'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
80 KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. All righty, welcome back, my friends. We have a very special guest on the line. His name is Ian Millhiser, and he is the Senior Constitutional Policy Analyst at the Center for American Progress and the editor of the Think Progress Justice. So, Ian, welcome to the table.
It's good to be here. Thanks so much.
Good. Well, listen, we just started off the program talking about the 45th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's death, and this is an opportune moment right now to speak a little bit about what's happening in particular in North Carolina. So why don't you give our listening audience, Ian, at least the backdrop, the framework of what's happening in North Carolina right now?
Absolutely. And this is actually a story that starts a little further south in Florida. So remember those six-hour voting lines they had in Florida?
Right.
Well, a big part of where that came from is Rick Scott, the Republican governor, signed a law that cut the number of voting days in half. It specifically took away the Sunday before Election Day and said there couldn't be early voting on that day. And there's two reasons they did that. The first is that if you're well off, if you have a lot of flexibility with your job, it's really easy to vote on Election Day. You just take off whatever time you need, you go to the polls. But low-income voters don't normally have this flexibility. And so for a lot of these low-income voters who tend to support Democrats, it's early or nothing. And then the purpose of targeting that Sunday is that a lot of black churches have pews to polls programs where the Sunday before Election Day, the preacher will lead the congregation to the polls and they'll all go vote in mass. And so if you take away that Sunday, you help depress black turnout because you're taking away an opportunity when a lot of these voters decide to cast their votes. And those voters, black voters in the United States, 96% of them voted for Obama the last time around. So restricting early voting, it's a way to keep Democrats from voting. That's why they're trying to do it. They did it in Florida. It led to six-hour lines for Democrats and Republicans in some places and fewer Democrats showing up. And now North Carolina wants to do the exact same thing. Their Republican House Majority Leader just dropped a bill which would take Florida's six-hour lines, their cutbacks on early voting, and import it to the great state of North Carolina.
Unbelievable. Now, let me dovetail into the next thing that I saw, and I'm sure you're aware of this, about the 11 North Carolina Republicans at they call it the North Carolina General Assembly,
right.
But how they are now sponsoring a resolution that in essence says they can ignore the federal government and the Constitution of this country.
Yeah, no, it is the most is one of the most breathtaking. I can't even say the most anymore in a post Tea Party America, but it is one of the most breathtaking bills I have ever seen. It says that federal courts aren't really allowed to interpret the Constitution. They certainly aren't allowed to tell the states what to do if the states violate the Constitution. And so all of those court decisions saying that there's a separation of church and state and North Carolina can't have an official religion, we're just going to ignore that. We're going to ignore the Constitution. We're going to ignore any court orders that come our way saying that we have to follow the Constitution. And they rely on a kind of constitutional reasoning that I flesh out in an article I put up yesterday on Think Progress. That basically assumes that the South won the Civil War. You know, one of the consequences of the Civil War was that we ratified the 14th Amendment, and that changed the way that our Constitution works so that the rights in the Bill of Rights constrain the states as well. They're saying, oh, that didn't really happen. We don't have to follow the Constitution. It is a terrifying resolution that they're trying to push through.
Now, what are the chances that this will pass? Because here in Arizona, Ian, believe it or not, we used to have a very rogue president of the Senate here named Russell Pierce, and I'm probably sure you're somewhat familiar with him. And
right.
He's actually was the only sitting state senator that was a president that was removed from office via a recall election. But he tried to do the same thing here in Arizona in the sense that he had like this quorum of 12 senators in Arizona, and all Republican senators. And it was basically a nullification committee that said, hey, we don't care what the federal government says.
Right.
You know, we're going to do what we want. And if you don't like it, then bring it on or we'll secede from the union.
Right. So, you know, I used to be a school teacher, and one thing I was taught when I was training to be a teacher is that your kids are going to test you at the beginning. And so you've got to be really tough and establish strong rules at the beginning, because when they're new, they want to see everything they can get away with. And once they figure out what they can get away with, they'll do it over and over again.
Sure.
The North Carolina State Legislature is just like my eighth graders. They have a newly, for the first time in a very long time, the entire North Carolina government is Republican. There's this billionaire Art Pope who spent a lot of money to make that happen. These guys have just showed up. It's the first day of school. They have all this power, and they're trying to figure out how much they can get away with. And that's why it's important that a lot of these bills are stopped in their tracks right now. Because, you know, just like my eighth graders, whatever these guys learn that they're able to get away with now, that's what they're going to do for as long as they're in power.
Now, tell us about particularly the Section 1 of this legislation that they're proposing, where it asserts that the Constitution of America, the United States of America, does not prohibit states or their subsidiaries from making laws respecting an establishment of religion. It sounds like they're trying to create a theocracy in North Carolina.
They're certainly trying to ignore the Constitution's protections against the Constitution's protections of the separation of church and state. So, like, what the Constitution says, the exact words of the First Amendment are, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. So it refers to Congress, and if you just read the First Amendment, you're going to say, oh, well, this only applies to the federal government. It doesn't apply to the states. And that's true unless you keep reading. If you keep reading, you get to the 14th Amendment.
Sure.
The 14th Amendment says that states cannot deny the privileges and immunities that belong to every citizen, that it says that there's a certain degree of liberty that cannot be taken away without due process of law, and it's that 14th Amendment that constrains the states. It says that all of the liberties that we enjoy under the Constitution, at least according to the Supreme Court, almost all of them
are fundamental to all of us. Listen, Ian, we got to go. Thanks a lot for your time on the air today. We really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Okay, there you have it. Ian Millhiser, Senior Constitutional Policy Analyst with the Center for American Progress. We'll be back with more of your calls and some audio from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. All righty, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, my friends, and we got a packed Freedom Line right now, Eric. They're absolutely packed, so we're going to get to everybody. But as I said, I want to get to the Martin Luther King Jr. clips, too. So let's start off with this first clip, and then we'll field some calls, and then we'll do some more clips, and that way people can really...
Back and forth.
Yeah, back and forth. So this one, as I told you, has to do with injustice. As we talked about earlier, like I said, part of being a liberal, part of being a progressive is that, guess what? If there is injustice, no matter where it is, we need to fight that tooth and nail. We need to stamp it out. We need to extirpate it. Extirpate. Is that the word? I'm thinking back in the I think there's a word. Look it up. Extirpate. I don't know. All right. But anyway, you can look that up. But in any case, we do. You just got to quash it, right? It's dead in its tracks. So this is an incredible clip, and just listen to it, and we'll get back to your calls in a second. Here we go.
For those who say to me, stick to civil rights, I have another answer.
Wait, hold on a second. I got to do this here. Hold on a second, Eric. I want to play it all the way through to the end. I just didn't tee it up properly. All right. Now we should be able to do it.
For those who say to me, stick to civil rights, I have another answer. That is that I've fought too long and too hard now against segregated public accommodation to end up segregating my moral concerns. I'm not going to do that. Others can do what they want to do. That's their business. If other civil rights leaders, for various reasons, refuse or can't take a stand or have to go along with the administration, that's their business. But I must say tonight that I know that justice is indivisible. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
All right, so there you have it. A very, very powerful quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in essence saying that, you know, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I love how he said, you know what, I'm not going to segregate my moral concerns. And just the way that he used that word segregation there, because they were saying, hey, you stick to civil rights and that's what you need to do. Just you free the black people. And he's like, no, No, I am not going to segregate my moral concerns because my moral concerns are applicable to all of God's children. And that's why he said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And to me, that is the battle cry, the hymn of the progressive liberal cause in this country, and not only in this country, but worldwide. Okay, so that being said, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M, 1-866-987-8466. Let's go up and first speak to Jim. Jim is on the line from Ashland. And Jim, welcome to the table.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In the excellent book, JFK and the Unspeakable by James Douglas, mm-hmm. Douglas has two S's on it. He says that Dr. Martin Luther King was shot by a sophisticated government plot that involved the FBI, the CIA, the Memphis police, mafia intermediaries, and an Army Special Forces sniper team. And
okay.
Apparently the transcript of the trial is available online.
All righty. Well, I appreciate that call. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's not the legacy that I just play a great clip talking about justice everywhere and injustice
and then conspiracy
and then
theory,
conspiracy theory comes right out. Look, you know, that's not really what we're trying to get at here right today.
Not
but
the point.
It's not the point. But look, you know, that's the all right. Anyway. 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466 is the number. Let's try Keith, and he's on the line from New Mexico right now. Keith, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah, I remember the day he was killed really vividly because I woke up in Virginia in a just recently desegregated community, and my family was going to visit our my great aunt in Philadelphia. And that day we drove along Interstate 495, and there was military everywhere on the highway and planes going in, the helicopters into D.C., and then we passed Baltimore. It was on fire, and then you could see helicopters there. And then we ended up driving down Germantown Avenue because that's where my great-aunt lived,
right,
which at that time was the African-American community. The military was everywhere on the streets. And then that night, we stayed in a wooden hotel in that neighborhood, and things were burning all around us, you know, and our family ended up praying, you know, while we're watching the TV of the riots outside. And then the next day, we go to this diner. And I remember all the curfew signs on trees and stuff. And the diner was all black, and everybody in there was like, what are you white people doing in a race riot? And they were so nice. They were getting us muffins and everything, and it was like the most beautiful experience after spending a horrifying evening, with this riot outside that you could smell. And that played a big role in my starting this group called Food Not Bombs, which I've been involved with for 33 years.
Wow. Well, listen, Keith, thank you for sharing that story. It's a very touching story, and I'm glad that that moment was, in a time of tragedy, able to transform you and continue to carry Dr. King's legacy in a very positive way. So thank you very much, Keith.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, there you have it. That's Keith there. So let me get back to another clip, then we'll get to the Freedom Lines here. This is another one, which I entitled these myself, Eric. I gave my own titles, but this one's called He Tried, okay? And again, getting back to the concept of fighting injustice, you always try. You never be a what-ifer. You never just say, you know what, you know, if I had done this, if I could have done that, or I would have done that. Don't ever approach life like that. Don't ever approach life like that. Margaret Mead, she said, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but something to the effect that never let it be said that a small group of dedicated individuals can't change the world, because oftentimes throughout history, they're the only ones who have. So it often starts with a catalyst, okay? In medicine, in chemistry, we have a thing called a catalyst. And what a catalyst does is think of it like a hill, okay? And think of you're trying to push a rock up a hill, okay? But once that rock gets to the top of the hill and then it goes down the hill, everything is easy, right? It just goes out on its own. But the question is, how can you be a catalyst? How can you get something to the point where you get it to the top of that mountain, and then once it's there, you let go, and guess what? Nature takes its course, and it goes and just goes and goes and goes, and it's easy at that point. So the question is, we all can be catalysts, okay? We all might not get the Nobel Prize for Peace. We all might not get the accolades and the praise and, you know, all those other things that are attended to celebrity and fame. But you try. You do your best to make a difference in somebody's life. And if you can do that, then well, you'll hear what Dr. Martin Luther King has to say. Let's go to the clip.
The question I want to raise this morning with you, is your heart right? If your heart isn't right, fix it up today. Get God to fix it up. Get somebody to be able to say about you, you may not have reached the highest height. He may not have realized all of his dreams, but he tried. Isn't that a wonderful thing for somebody to say about you? He tried to be a good man. He tried to be a just man. He tried to be an honest man. His heart was in the right place. And I can hear the voice saying, crying out through the eternities, I accept you. You are a recipient of my grace because it was in your heart. That is so well that it was within thine heart.
Wow, that I get teary-eyed thinking of that, man. That is so powerful. I mean, it's so powerful because think about what he's saying, that your heart, his heart was in the right place. He tried. He tried to do the right thing. And that's the thing is, look, we just got off with Ian Millhiser, and we were talking about North Carolina and Republican state senators. Their heart's not in the right place. They're not trying to help better the human condition. They're not trying to ease suffering. Okay, these conservative Republicans, their heart is in the wrong place right now. And I firmly believe that. When you look at Rick Scott and the governor of Florida trying to deny the right to vote, to suppress votes so that African Americans have to stand in line for 6 hours long, his heart is not in the right place. It is not in thine heart. It is not in his heart. So be proud when you're a liberal. Be proud to be a progressive because your heart is in the right place. I know that. I listen to talk radio, I talk to progressives, I talk to liberals, and I know that your heart is in the right place. So never think that you can't make a difference. You just try. You keep trying, like Dr. Martin Luther King said, and you will make a difference. And anytime you see injustice anywhere, you snuff it out. You do whatever you can do as an individual to stamp out injustice, to stamp out any time that you see somebody is fighting against someone's liberties or their freedoms or equality. Because that's what a liberal's about. That's what a progressive is all about. And you're going to hear more of Dr. Martin Luther King throughout this program. And let me just give you the Freedom Lines right now. It's 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. Again, 1-866-987-8466. I know we got a lot of people online right now, and I'm going to get to each and every one of you. We got Maria calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. We got Mark calling from San Francisco, California. Jeff from Louisville, Kentucky. I mean, you got people all over the country. Mike in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Everybody wants to weigh in with their thoughts. And each and every one of you, you're going to get an opportunity to hear what Dr. Martin Luther King said. And then, again, going back to what we were saying earlier in Georgia, I want to get to that story, too, about they had this segregated prom in Georgia. And it's not only in one high school. There's several high schools in Georgia that this is a leftover from the pre-Civil War days. What's that?
I said that's crazy.
It's absolutely.
What year is this?
It's right? It's 2013 and we're still fighting segregation in America. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
From 1480 KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Alrighty, welcome back. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today and tomorrow and then all next week except Tuesday. Tom will be broadcasting on Tuesday, so we appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, especially on this very important day, the 45th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s death. And as I said at the outset, we're playing you some of the clips that you might not have heard in the past. Everyone heard about the mountaintop and I Have a Dream, but there's a lot of other great audio that perhaps you haven't heard, and I'm doing my best to share that with you today. So let's go to Jason. He's listening online in Sarasota, Florida. Jason, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Dr. Newcomb. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to echo your appreciation of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and I believe that he is one of the greatest leaders this nation has ever produced. And you encouraged your listeners a moment ago to fight injustice. Dr. Newcomb, I would just like to take the opportunity in support of a previous caller, which I believe you very unjustly and reflexively dismissed. He was actually citing a civil law case that is posted on the official website of the King Family Center in Atlanta, Georgia. And I would encourage your listeners, if we do wish to raise Dr. King properly to his place in our history, that we should continue to question and investigate and pursue his actual killers, which according to this civil case, which again, I urge your listeners to pursue, and I would hope that you would have the open mind to pursue it.
No, absolutely, Jason. You know what? I apologize. I probably was a little bit too dismissive because I really wanted to celebrate the spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King and his message, and I understand that, you know, there's probably some validity to that, but I understand what you're saying.
The case is King Family versus Jowers, and I just, to finish, and I appreciate the time here, if we hold these great leaders up properly, we need to seek justice. And justice,
sure.
Dr. King's case would be to fully pursue the killers of the great doctor. And
no, point well taken. Absolutely. So I appreciate your perspective on that, Jason. Thank you.
Try to bring attention to this unsolved murder. I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That's Jason from Sarasota, Florida. And I appreciate what he's saying. But, you know, a lot of times when, you know, Eric, you and I have done plenty of shows on the 9/11 tragedy and, you know, sort of what was behind that. And look, I agree with Jason. You always got to get to the who the actual killers were, whether it was Martin Luther King Jr. or John F. Kennedy, et cetera. Mm. But, you know, oftentimes I don't want to also detract from what his message was, too.
Right. And that was the whole point of what you were talking about.
Right.
It wasn't about conspiracy theories. It was about celebrating a life.
Right. And look, who knows who, whether it was, you know, the guy who just died in prison not too long ago or it was a government conspiracy. The bottom line was he was a great spirit and a great orator and a great human being. And that's what I really want to reflect upon today. So that being said, let me talk to you about this next one, or I'm not going to talk to you, but I'm going to play this one because we talked about how a lot of conservative Republicans are continuing to try to suppress votes, continuing to try to secede from the union, not allowing gay individuals equal rights, discriminating against minorities. I mean, you name it, it seems to be the case. And Eric, if you look at a lot of the conservative media, whether it's Fox News, whether it's conservative talk radio, there's a lot of anger in their voices, a lot of vitriol in their voices. And there doesn't really seem to be a lot of love and a lot of hope and a lot of tolerance. And that's something that Martin Luther King Jr. always spoke about, was, you know, passive, nonviolent resistance. And that ultimately, if you smother your adversaries or those who hate you with love, eventually you will transform those people. And that's not an easy thing to really understand. I mean, you look at a lot of conservatives, you look at a lot of conservative Republicans, they're very militaristic. They believe in strong, big militaries and bombs and, you know, just, you know, even John McCain, who was a presidential candidate for the Republican Party, even joked about a nuclear war. It was like bomb, 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 Iran, bomb, bomb, bomb. And, you know, and that's not what Jesus was about. That's not what Mother Teresa was about. And surely was not what Dr. Martin Luther King was about. They were about love and touching people with the spirit. Gandhi, too. Gandhi was an incredible spirit in that sense. So let's listen to what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has to say about loving your enemies.
Now that is the final reason I think that Jesus says, love your enemies. It is this, that love has within it a redemptive power. And that is a power there that eventually transforms individuals. That's why Jesus says, love your enemies. Because if you hate your enemies, you have no way to redeem and to transform your enemies. But if you love your enemies, you will discover that at the very root of love is the power of redemption. You just keep loving people and keep loving them, even though they are mistreating you. Here's a person who is a neighbor, and this person is doing something wrong to you, and all of that. Just keep being friendly to that person.
Keep loving them. Don't do anything to embarrass them. Just keep loving them. And they can't stand it too long. Oh, they react in many ways in the beginning. They react with bitterness because they're mad because you love them like that. They react with guilt feelings, and sometimes they'll hate you a little more at that transition period. But just keep loving them. And by the power of your love, they will break down under the load. That's love, you see. It is redemptive. And this is why Jesus says love. There's something about love that builds up. And it's creative. There is something about hate that tears down and is destructive. So love your enemies.
So there you have it. A very, very powerful quote about love and the power of love to redeem someone, to transform someone. And again, as going back to sort of what conservatism is all about, and we talked about this yesterday, conservatism is about being fixed in your ways, not yielding, to have the same worldview no matter what the reality of the situation is on the ground, versus the liberal who believes in the opportunity of transformation and that there is the power of love to build up versus hate, which tears down and is destructive. And that's what you hear in conservative airways, hate and destruction and tearing down. But yet we liberals, we progressives, we want to build up. We want to conquer people, not with bombs and weapons and violence and guns, but with love and the Holy Spirit. It's a big difference between the two.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom today and tomorrow, and then the rest of next week, with the exception of Tuesday. Tom will be doing his normally scheduled broadcast at that particular time. But we do have a special guest on the line right now, and then after the guest, I'm going to get to the Freedom Lions. You guys are all patient, so we're going to be talking to you very shortly. But we have on the line right now Taylor Lincoln, and Taylor Lincoln is the Director of Research of the Public Citizens Congress Watch and author of the new book, Reality Check. So, Taylor, welcome to the table.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you, Taylor. So tell us a little bit about the book, Reality Check, because from my understanding, it has something to do with government regulations and the need thereof.
Right. Well, government regulation is really central to our entire system of government, and it's really at the heart of many of the political debates we're having in our country. One could say that that was even the central issue of the recent election between President Obama and Mitt Romney. And we wrote the book because of a really strange occurrence that occurred, but many people might not have even recognized as it unfolded, and that is, in the fall of 2008, we had the historic bursting of the housing bubble and the financial crisis, which led to the worst recession since the 1930s. And for a brief moment, there was a national consensus that the nation's drift towards deregulation had gone too far. The mortgage lending practices had been unsupervised. Financial derivatives were completely unregulated. And conservatives and liberals alike said, we need more regulation.
Correct.
What happened is that as President Obama took office and people became more and more disenchanted with the lousy economy and the high unemployment, they needed a scapegoat. And what did they blame? They blamed regulations. And so there started being these bumper sticker claims in Congress about job-killing regulations and regulation tsunamis and regulation onslaughts, as if it was regulation that was to blame for the conditions that deregulation had left behind. And so we did this book to retrace the history in certain distinct areas of the economy that had been deregulated and had led to disaster, and in particular derivatives and mortgage lending. But we've also looked at many ways that regulations actually work in the real world. And it turns out, when you look back through the lens of history versus looking at doomsday forecasts,
sure,
that much of what has been said about regulations in the past, it hasn't come to fruition, that the fear-mongering doesn't prove to be true, the bad results don't occur, and not only that, regulations have often generated unexpectedly good results. For instance, with the Clean Air Act is a great example. They said it was going to strangle the economy and so forth. Well, it's been an incredible success, and there haven't been anywhere near the adverse effects that were predicted. And that's just one of innumerable examples in our book.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, look, Taylor, this is something, though, quite frankly, that has become part of the playbook, if you will, of conservative Republicans, is it not? I mean, this is so entrenched in conservative philosophy such that they want you to feel as though the government, by putting forward common sense, practical regulations, is somehow your enemy, and that ultimately this is going to lead to tyranny and denial of your liberties and your rights and your freedoms. How have they been so successful in doing that, Taylor? Because to me, you know, I'm a physician, and when I look at the human body and I look at it's completely regulated. Everything has to do with equilibrium, and whether it's your blood sugar or your blood pressure or whatnot, everything has to do with regulation. And as long as everything complies and falls within that framework of the regulation, you get health. But when things are unregulated, like cancer, right, when a cell becomes cancerous, it's unregulated. It basically just keeps growing and growing and replicating. So talk to the audience a little bit about what's sort of underneath this. What's really driving this?
Right. Well, it doesn't have to do with – I'll tell you what's not driving it is common sense.
Right, right, for sure.
But I think what's driving it – you would know as well as I, but I think what's driving it are two things. One is just a concentrated campaign, the whole thing about saying it enough and the public believes it's true.
Sure.
This has been a steady drumbeat of the right-wing think tanks really since – yeah, at least symbolically about the time of the election of Ronald Reagan, maybe a little bit before, but that was really when the country came to embrace deregulation. And you have these think tanks like the Heritage Foundation, American Enterprise Institute, Manhattan Institute, as a drumbeat criticizing regulations. And I think what they have done is they've tapped into the country's natural cynicism towards government, right? This is a country that
right.
It's almost in our DNA. It's in our roots to have a skepticism towards government, which I think most of us could probably believe is, you know, just fine, right? We should be skeptical towards government, but government has become such a scourge in people's minds. So then you have all this stuff, these allegations about regulations, and you'll notice very rarely that they put forth any evidence. You know, when they say job-killing regulations, they don't often mention what the jobs are.
Right.
I think that they have a receptive audience, and they say it enough and enough and enough and enough, and they've just demonized this word.
Do you see the trend changing? Because look, when I even look back to the founding fathers, Taylor, and I look at, you know, the whole genesis of this country, it was precisely because it was an unregulated phenomenon that occurred. Right. It was King George saying that, hey, there's taxation without representation. It was basically no regulations, right, until the people fought up and they got their freedom, and then we put forward common sense regulations that if there was going to be taxes, there's rules, there's regulations, there's things that you need to follow. Isn't that the whole premise of our country, is that we need regulations? We can't be unregulated.
Right. Well, we can't be unregulated, and none of these people that – nobody really thinks this. Like, take, for instance, the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donohue.
Right.
He's used beating on regulations as a big fundraising tool for himself.
Sure.
But in one of his speeches I read, he's complaining about regulations, but he said 75% of them we need. And it's sort of like thinking, if I was in a debate with Tom Donohue, I'd be like, we really narrowed it down right there.
Right.
You're saying we need 75% of them. Well, here at Public Citizen, we're not saying we need 100% of them or that 100% of them are perfect. How could they be? Many of them are out of date. Some of them may not have been written as well as they possibly could have been. You know, nothing's perfect.
Sure.
But on the whole, these are good faith efforts to ensure fair play and protect worker safety. And they just have a good record of actually having done so. And when we look back at what the claims have been in history, and that's a lot of what our book does, goes back into the 30s, and it takes what people actually said about the formation of the Securities and Exchange Commission and the FDIC.
Sure.
Monstrous systems. They're going to cripple the economy, and on and on and on. Or removing lead from gasoline was going to cost 40 million jobs. These
sure.
things are comical in retrospect.
Right.
But unfortunately, when they make the claims in the present about going forward, they're taken seriously time and time again. And so sort of like, what's the cliche, fool me once, shame on me, or shame on you, fool me twice, shame on you.
George Bush said,
George Bush couldn't say it right.
Fool me once, shame on you, fool me, you can't get fooled again. That was his thing. But look, I mean, the bottom line is you're right. This goes back throughout the history of this country, Taylor, and that's the thing that really sort of disturbs me, is that people continue to get fooled by conservative Republican rhetoric, which has no basis whatsoever in reality. And I kind of think of this whole regulation thing. It's that old saying, you know, when the cat's away, the mice will play, right? I mean, that's basically it. They want to remove the cat. So, you know, that way the mice can do whatever they want. And didn't we see this in this financial debacle, like you said, referenced earlier, with the derivatives and the credit default swaps? I mean, it was completely unregulated.
Well, that's right. So yesterday we did our book release, and we had a great panel there. And included on the panel was Brooks Livorn, who sounded the alarm in the 1990s about financial derivatives. And here's the thing. In the 1990s, when she was sounding the alarm about financial derivatives, Orange County, California had just gone bankrupt after losing billions of dollars in bad derivatives trades. Other municipalities and large institutions had also lost a lot of money from making bets that
sure.
they didn't understand. But more importantly, the hedge fund, long-term capital management,
right.
had crashed, and we need to run.
Now,
all the warnings were there in the 90s.
Right, and it was all ignored. Listen, Taylor, we appreciate your time on the air. Author of the new book, Reality Check. Everybody, check it out. Taylor, thanks a lot for your time today.
It's available at Amazon.
Thank you, sir.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona, this is Dr. Mike Newcomb, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back, my friends. We got the Freedom Lines pack right now. The number, if you want to tune in, or call in, I should say, 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. And we are going to go to our guest. I guess we have a guest here named Rainey Reitman, who is the activism director and for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And let's just go to Rainey. Rainey, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
Good, good. Great to have you, Randy. Well, tell us, what's happening with the Electronic Frontier Foundation?
Well, the Electronic Frontier Foundation is a nonprofit civil liberties law firm and advocacy center. We're based in the San Francisco area, and I am the activism director, so I deal with helping individuals speak out on issues related to civil liberties on the internet and in digital technologies. So free speech, privacy, government surveillance, things like that.
Oh, interesting. So now what are some of the top 1, 2, 3 projects that you're working on in particular with respect to the foundation?
Sure. So I work specifically on issues related to personal privacy and government surveillance. I think a particular interest right now is a bill that we have in the state of California called the Right to Know Act. It's a bill that got proposed recently that would allow, that would update actually existing transparency law in California. So right now in California, you can go to a company and say, hey, I'd like to know what information of mine, what personal information of mine you've collected and given to other companies for direct marketing purposes, like the companies that send you junk mail.
Right.
The new proposal would update that law so that it would make sense for digital technology, so that you would be able to go to a company and that you did business with online and say, I want to know what companies you've given my information to. And that could be like, for example, if you use a Facebook app and they collect data on you and then send it to a whole bunch of big marketing companies and online advertisers and data brokers, and then that gets fed into other companies that trade in this personal data. Right now, consumers don't really have a very good idea about what companies are sucking up their data and who they're passing it to.
Right. Now, it kind of sounds frightening, though. I mean, how widespread is this practice of, you know, we're just out there on the internet, we're having fun, we're on Facebook and, you know, trying to catch up with some old friends or look at a photograph. I mean, what are they sending out there with respect to who we are and what we're about? What kind of information?
Well, that's a really good question. And unfortunately, we only have an inkling about what's going on right now, and that's because there aren't any real transparency laws. So we know that there are really big companies out there called data brokers who have built an entire business model around the practice of receiving and collecting and buying and sharing and selling access to data. And that there's been a lot of questions about, well, where are they getting all of this information? In fact, there have been congressional inquiries into this, and the Federal Trade Commission is currently investigating the practice. And in general, these companies have pushed back and said, you know, we can give you very general facts about where we're getting our information, but we're not going to answer specific questions because it's a trade secret.
Right, right.
For the everyday Internet user, the everyday person going about their business who doesn't realize, hey, when I sign up for this service or when I visit that site, they're creating a profile on me or they're sending my data to other sites, this measure, the Right to Know Act in California, would be a really powerful transparency measure. It would kind of do what we expect privacy policies to do, but they don't. We expect privacy policies to tell us, if I use this site, what's happening to my personal information. But privacy policies are vague and they're full of legalese. But this act, if it's actually passed, and it's facing a lot of industry pushback, but if it's passed, we would actually have the ability to go to a company and say, tell me what personal information you have on me, and tell me what other companies have you sold it to.
Now, let me ask you this, because it almost sounds like you can make a constitutional argument for the right to privacy. I mean, because I know what you're saying is with the Right to Know Act, you can go to the companies and find out specifically what's being said or shared with respect to your own person. But how about legislation just says you can't do that, period? I mean, don't we have a right to say that, no, I don't want any of that information shared?
Well, so that's an interesting question. I think that there are a lot of people who want to see sort of broader privacy legislation in place.
Right.
We see that, for example, in the European Union, where they have much stronger privacy legislation in place, and they're, in fact, considering a data privacy regulation that would update it with even stronger regulation. In the United States, we have much more sector-specific regulations. So, for example,
right,
we have medical privacy laws, and we have privacy laws around employment background checks. And we don't really have anything that would just be sort of a general Internet privacy law other than the law we have in California, which says you have to post a privacy policy.
Right. But even with respect to the medical side of that, I remember filling out insurance. I'm a physician, and I remember when you fill out, if you're trying to get an insurance plan or whatnot, there's like these disclaimers at the end that you have to sign it and say that, hey, you could share all of my medical information, everything that you know about me, with other companies. And I feel that that's just an effort for them to kind of profile me medically, and then if it's shared with other insurance companies, that's a way for them to deselect me out of the pool if they deem me high risk.
You know, I don't know if we want to get into it, but I think you're absolutely right. There's that when we talk about medical privacy particularly, I don't even consider it a privacy law. I consider it a disclosure law.
Right.
Under HIPAA, the federal HIPAA, you actually don't have huge rights to medical privacy. You just have the right to know who they're giving your information to. Now, in California, we have a slightly stronger medical privacy law.
Interesting.
But unfortunately, I think there's a major disconnect between actually protected and what the law says.
Right. All right. Well, listen, Rainey, we got to run right now. We appreciate your time on the air, and thanks for your insights.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, well, listen, we'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program and your calls on the Freedom Lines when we get back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Hey, welcome back, my friends. 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M is the number if you want to participate. The Freedom Lines are open right now. Let's get to Harry on the line, listening on freespeech.org. He's from Providence, Rhode Island. Harry, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be on. I have a great quote from Dr. King at a time when his house was bombed. But before that, I wanted to mention that TBS indicated years ago that there's no basis for racism scientifically because there's only one race, the human race.
Right.
And pigmentation of all peoples depends on their proximity to the equator.
Or a tanning salon.
Yes. But I'm so impressed by what Dr. King did when his house was bombed. He came home. He made sure his wife and his baby were safe. And he went to the porch, which had been part of the bombing. And there were many blacks there with guns, knives, and bottles who wanted revenge, and the police couldn't break them up.
Right.
And he said the following. Now let's not become panicky. If you have weapons, take them home. We cannot solve this problem through violence. Remember the words of Jesus. He who lives by the sword will perish by the sword. We must love our white brothers no matter what they do to us. There were shouts of amen, and a reporter wrote, many people were crying. Silently, they went home. A bloody race riot was avoided.
That's amazing.
Think that's incredible.
Harry, I'm starting to well up again with tears, so I agree. Yeah, that's
He lived it.
Yeah, no, he totally lived
it. He absolutely lived it.
Well, listen, what I'm going to do now, Harry, I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to play another audio clip from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on war and violence, and it's a good segue from the story that you just told us. So thanks for sharing that with the listening audience.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. All right, that's Harry. Yeah, very powerful story there. Well, this is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on war, and as we know, as I said yesterday, Albert Einstein said, I know not with what weapons World War II will be fought, but for sure World War III will be fought with sticks and stones. So this is kind of somewhat on that wavelength here, and it speaks for itself.
A time comes when silence is betrayal. That time has come for us. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. My own government. What do they think as we test out our latest weapons on them, just as the Germans tested out new medicine and new tortures in the concentration camps of Europe? Now that is little left to build on save bitterness. We are met by deep but understandable mistrust. Speak for them is to explain this lack of confidence in Western words, and especially their distrust of American intentions now. The world now demands a maturity of America that we may not be able to achieve. This way of settling differences is not just. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Somehow this madness must cease. We must stop now. I speak as one who loves America, to the leaders of our own nation. The great initiative in this war is ours. The initiative to stop it must be ours.
Amazing. And that's an amazing, amazing piece of audio there, Eric.
Very dramatic music.
Very dramatic music, yes. I don't think...
Did you add that?
I think, yeah, I added that maybe, or it was added on the clip itself.
I see.
I don't think he had that playing in the background when he was giving that speech.
Definitely not.
No, but it does add a little bit more oomph to it. But in any case, I mean, think about what he said there for a second. I mean, first and foremost, silence is betrayal. And that's actually one of his famous quotes is, you know, well, what did he say? He says, I care not about the words of my adversaries. It is the silence of my friends that I fear the most. And that, in essence, what he's saying, it silences betrayal. But as he talked about the government and America and being purveyors of violence, and that we needed to change our ways, that war and destruction and violence.
It's only gotten worse.
No, and it has gotten worse. I mean, you know, we just had a war in Iraq, a war in Afghanistan, you know, North Korea kind of agitating right now. I mean, we seem to be in perpetual war in this country. But the key point of that whole audio clip to me was when he talked about how when a country, whoever that country is, when you spend more in military defense versus social uplift, then that particular country is approaching spiritual death. And that is very, very profound if you really think about it. And again, I think therein lies a major difference between conservatism and liberalism, because many, many conservatives really believe about military buildup. They say, oh, we want fiscal restraint. We want austerity, that the government shouldn't be spending all this money that we don't have. But yet when you look at the biggest ticket item that we have in our budget, it is indeed military spending. It far outpaces anything else that we spend money on in this country. But here you have conservatives saying, yes, we have to continue to spend more and more and more on military budgets and defense. But yet you have liberals and progressives saying, guess what? No, no, we need to spend more money on social uplift to help people, whether it's health care or education or housing, to give people a helping hand. That, to me, makes a lot more sense than spending money on destruction and militarism. And I agree 100% with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that, guess what, when you end up spending a disproportionate amount of money on military defense versus social uplift, then you are indeed approaching spiritual death. And you know what? We say this is a Judeo-Christian nation, and if you really think about it, I never recall Jesus talking about, you know, hey, let's get that military budget up there versus the social uplift. I mean, all the pictures that I see of the apostles and stuff like that, Eric, I don't see them brandishing like swords and bows and arrows and clubs. Yeah, assault weapons.
Of the time.
No, they're there in little flowing robes with, you know, Birkenstock sandals and, you know, long hair. I mean, that's basically, and you know, the word of God. That was it. But, you know, it's a society gone awry, and we really need to focus on those things that do uplift people and stop focusing on discrimination and hate and violence and anger. And that's the message that you're hearing today from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as we honor him during the 45th anniversary of his untimely death at the age of 39 years old. So very, very sad. All right, listen, let's get back to some of the Freedom Lines. I think next in the queue is Steve on the line from Sirius. He's listening from Sirius XM, and he's in Haymarket, Virginia. Steve, welcome to the program. Hello, Steve. Steve? He's been holding for a while. All right, I'm going to have to just cut Steve off there because he's not answering, and let's just go back next to Mark, who's listening on the line from San Francisco, California. Welcome, Mark.
Welcome. You know, when you talk about Dr. Martin Luther King, and then you look at the Ryan budget, what would he say about the way the Republican Party is going and their obsession with tax breaks for the rich at the expense of middle class and poor people's programs that they paid into or that they need? What would he say about this Republican Party? It would be totally amazing to hear what he would say at this time if he saw what the Republican Party's doing to this country.
Mark, I think that's an excellent point, and that was his whole point in that audio clip, is that, look, you're spending so much money on military defense and military buildup, but what about social uplift? And you're correct 100% that the Ryan budget, the Republican conservative budgets are all about, you know, cutting away those safety nets. And, you know, look, the difference is this. If you and I were to see somebody drowning, okay, you and I would throw them a life raft or, you know, a life vest and say, come on, we'll help you, versus, you know, the conservatives, they throw them an anchor and say, okay, swim, swim, try harder, come on, you can make it. And that's really the difference between the two of us, Mark. But, you know, isn't it an atrocity, this Ryan budget?
It is. And not only that, but if you look at the Republican Party in general, their whole agenda is cutting taxes for the rich and deliver this, you know, the middle class programs and transfer wealth This is their agenda. Transfer wealth from the middle class and poor to the rich. They don't care about anything else. That's all they've been bought and paid for. It's a very sad state in this country. We're at war with the Republican Party, the middle class and the poor.
I hear you. It's Robin Hood in reverse. Listen, I appreciate the call, Mark. I got to run. Thanks for your time here.
Okay, thanks.
All right, there you have it. It's Mark Nolan from San Francisco, California. We'll be back with more of your calls. 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb broadcasting live from the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike sitting in right now. Going to get to these Freedom Lines very quickly, but I want to play this quote here, Eric. This is also another one talking about poverty. We just had a gentleman calling in talking about the Ryan budget and how atrocious it is from a moral standpoint, and I agree that budget should be a moral document. Anytime you create a budget, whether it's at the state level or the federal level, it should represent your values and what you believe in as a country and as a democracy. And clearly,
well, I think that does represent Paul Ryan's.
Well, it does. It does represent his sort of narrow-minded view of what freedom and liberty is about. But this, look, poverty has been around since, you know, the beginning of mankind for all intents and purposes, but it's clearly something that, given today's technology and time, that we could very well eradicate. But this is very prescient in the sense that Martin Luther King Jr. talked about this, you know, 40, 50 years ago and had something very specific to say.
This can happen to America, the richest nation in the world. There's nothing wrong with that. This is America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
Wow. So it's not a matter of whether or not we have the technology or the abundance of money and resources to do it. Do you have the will? And you heard what he said, Eric, how actually now is the time to bridge that gap between the haves and the have-nots. But versus Paul Ryan, he wants to increase the gap between the haves and the have-nots. Again, a very distinct difference between the way a conservative looks at the world and the way a liberal looks at the world. We want to bring people together. I often say it's not the size of the feast that matters. It's how many people you can invite around the table to participate in the feast. What good is it to have this big grand table with all of this food and drink and merriment and there's like two people there? I mean, it'd be a lot nicer if there's 15, 20 and, you know, now that's a party, right?
Sure.
So there you have it. All right. Well, listen, let's get back to the Freedom Line. Let's see. Next up in the queue is Jeff from Sirius, and he's calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. So I believe, arguably, the greatness of Martin Luther King was that he did not allow himself to be lowered into what we call the base. And I have two examples on two totally different topics of how America needs to start having dialogue instead of debates. All right. And using the metaphor that came, that was brought up yesterday about nuclear proliferation as a metaphor for firearms proliferation, if we use North Korea and Iraq as the criminals, because it's illegal for them to have nuclear weapons, would anybody feel safer if the United States were to give up its nuclear weapons, which is what one side of the nuclear firearms issue is asking of the other with pretending that they don't understand where the other side's coming from. So if that's how we have a dialogue on that, instead of a debate, which is a winner or loser. And then what you just brought up is, should we spend more money on military than we do on,
social
entitlements,
uplift,
for lack of a better word?
No, so I call it social uplift, not entitlements.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Good. And so turn that into a dialogue instead of a debate. The question I believe that would work best is, how can we spend our money so that we save the most American lives? So I think it's a failure on both sides' part that we turn this into a fight, a contest, a debate. And the greatness of Martin Luther King was he did not have debates. He had dialogue.
Sure.
I would invite both sides. This is what really upset me after Sandy Hook, is
right.
that I wanted a dialogue, and I can't get it.
I hear you. All right, well, listen, very well said. I appreciate your point of view. Thanks a lot, Jeff, for calling in today.
Thank you.
Okay, that's Jeff calling in once more, dialogue and not debate. Well, he's got a point there because, as he said, in the debate there's a winner and a loser, and that's not really what we're trying to accomplish here. Do I got time for another quote, another thing here? Let me play this one. This is Dr. Martin Luther King talking about poor whites and their oppression.
And when those brothers told me what they were earning, I said, now, you know what? You ought to be marching with us. You just as poor as Negro. And I said, you are put in the position of supporting your oppressor. Because through prejudice and blindness, you fail to see that the same forces that oppress Negroes in American society oppress poor white people. And all you are living on is the satisfaction of your skin being white and the drum major instinct of thinking that you are somebody big because you're white and you're so poor you can't send your children to school.
Unbelievable. I mean, that basically summarizes the Republican Party today. That is the Republican Party, because in reality, you want to talk about welfare, you want to talk about absolute numbers of people on welfare assistance. It's really more whites if you want to look at that nationwide. But unfortunately, the Republican Party has been very good with their propaganda to inject prejudice, to inject blindness, to inject ignorance, so that, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, there's this drumbeat, drum major instinct to just follow along like a sheep, you know, like cattle in a herd. And that's sad. It's sad because, you know, the bottom line is we're all in this together. We're all equal. And when he saw those poor white people who were obviously not making hardly any money. They were making as little money as the fellow black people. But nonetheless, you had those people, just because of the color of their skin, being under this impression that somehow I'm superior, I'm greater than you, and that eventually, you know, I will hit the lotto and I'm just going to continue to follow along this blind path of prejudice and discrimination and bigotry and hate. And look, this is exactly what we continue to see here in America when it comes to the modern-day Republican Party. Make no bones about it. I mean, when you see the whole debate with marriage inequality, that they want marriage inequality, they don't want immigrants to have equal rights, they don't want people to have access to health care, they don't want our citizens to have access to a good education, they don't want the environment to be a clean environment, but yet they're able to trick all these people blindly following their prejudiced views. It's absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. The Freedom Express continuing to chug along here. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. And the Freedom Lines are open right now at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. Going to get to your calls here in a second. We're going to finish up this hour, Eric, with more Dr. Martin Luther King audio as well as the listeners' comments. So before I get to the callers, I want to play one more clip for you here. And this is called Dependent on Others. And one of the things that you often hear about conservatives is that, you know what, we're rugged individualists. You know, it's my way or the highway, and I don't need anybody else's help. And, you know, I'm sick and tired of these lazy, fat welfare mamas, you know, sucking off the teat of the American government. And it's all obviously simply not true, because the bottom line is, guess what? We are all in this together. And you saw during the Republican Party National Convention where President Obama, you know, had made a statement or a quote to the effect that, you know what, you didn't build this on your own. This country was built through the sweat, the tears, the hard labor of everybody involved. And then, of course, the Republicans tried to take that, and yes, we did build it. And that's always been sort of the conservative viewpoint, is that, you know, they are singularly responsible for everything that is great about this country and everything great in their life, and that they did it irrespective of anybody else's help, that they did it in this bubble, this vacuum. And that simply is not the case. So this is a very powerful piece of audio from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on how, in reality, whether you realize it or not, we are all interconnected and we are all dependent on each other to a certain extent.
And don't forget, in doing something for others, that you have what you have because of others. Don't forget that. We are tied together in life and in the world. And you may think you got all you got by yourself. You know, before you got out here to church this morning, you were dependent on more than half of the world. You get up in the morning and go to the bathroom and you reach over for a bar of soap, and that's handed to you by a Frenchman. You reach over for a sponge, and that's given to you by a Turk. You reach over for a towel, and that comes to your hand from the hands of a Pacific Islander. And then you go into the kitchen to get your breakfast. You reach on over to get a little coffee, and that's poured in your cup by a South American. Or maybe you decide that you want a little tea this morning, only to discover that that's poured in your cup by a Chinese. Or maybe you want a little cocoa, that's poured in your cup by a West African. Then you want a little bread, and you reach over to get it, and that's given to you by the hands of an English-speaking farmer, not to mention the baker. Before you get through eating breakfast in the morning, you're dependent on more than half of the world. That's the way God structured it. That's the way God structured this world. So let us be concerned about others, because we are dependent on others.
Amen to that. Let us be concerned about others, because we are dependent on others. And again, a key differentiating point between how we as liberals and progressives look at the world versus the conservative viewpoint, because we are dependent on others. We are interconnected, and that is the beauty of the world. As he said, that's the way God created it, and that's the way it should be. I mean, he referenced there, I just wrote this down in that particular audio clip, France, Turkey, Pacific Islanders, South America, Chinese, West Africa, England, all of those countries were referenced in that piece of audio clip. And that was before even get done with breakfast in the morning. That's how interconnected the world is. So that's the beauty of life. That's the beauty of America. We are the melting pot. We are the Rainbow Coalition. But isn't it very interesting how conservative Americans, conservative Republicans, don't want that worldview to take root? I told you earlier about Georgia and the segregated prom that's going on today in modern-day America, in Georgia. And there's four girls, young girls, high school girls, teenagers, two white, two black, who are trying to change the times so that there is an integrated prom in Georgia. Let me just tell you where this is. I got this story here today about these Georgia students. Stephanie Sinnott, Marishia Rucker, Quanisha Wallace, and Keela Bloodworth. As I said, two black, two white girls, females, who are now, as it's structured, being forced to attend separate proms because seniors at Wilcox County High School, there's a quote-unquote tradition there, where the parents, the white parents, say, we don't want any blacks. We don't want any minorities. We don't want people of skin color at our proms. And guess what? We're going to fund our own prom just for white people. No blacks allowed. I mean, this is going back to the days where blacks had to sit in certain parts of the bus and couldn't go to a counter at a restaurant. But these girls are fighting back right now. They've created a Facebook page, and now they have national recognition, so that the quote-unquote tradition-bound classmates don't just have their white prom, that the prom is shared by everybody. They put up posters about the integrated prom at the school, Wilcox County High School, only to have them ripped down. And as they go out there and try to promote the idea of an integrated prom, They're being bullied, harassed, ostracized. Unbelievable that that is still happening. Still happening today in America. They said that these students, they sit in different places when it's time for lunch. White students sit in the back. Black students sit only up front. Black kids have lunch outside while the white kids have theirs in the yard. White students, particularly girls who date black students, they too are bullied and ostracized. So the dream and the struggle continues to this day. It's not over. I think we're winning. I think slowly but surely we're stamping out intolerance. We're stamping out bigotry. We're stamping out segregation. But the fight must continue. And that fight, quite frankly, is what liberalism and progressivism is all about. Let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now. 1-866-987-THOM-TOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let me see who's up first in the queue here, Eric. I want to give preference to someone who's been holding the longest. So let's go next to Paul from South Lyon, Michigan, and he's listening on freespeech.org. Paul, welcome to the table.
Yeah, how you doing, Dr. Mike? Thanks for all the work you do, keeping us informed.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to agree with the guy you had on from Public Citizen talking about government regulations.
Uh-huh.
And I would actually take it a step further, though. I'm an economist, and not only do government regulations not kill jobs, they actually create jobs. And here's a couple examples. Increased mileage requirements for cars. You know, it forces the car companies to hire people to design these cars, engineers and people that build them that are going to get better mileage. It doesn't kill jobs at all.
Sure.
And another example would be, regulating coal plants to not pollute the air, which kills thousands of people every year. They're forced to hire engineers to design, better filters and to build them and everything else. And it actually creates jobs, helps the economy, helps everybody.
Paul, I agree with you 100%. And like I said, this propaganda that has infiltrated the DNA of conservative Republicans and conservative Americans is quite unfortunate because, like you said, regulations are good things. They're not bad things. Of course, if you overregulate something and stifle things, that's different. But you know what? It's part and parcel of everything. Could you imagine like a baseball game with no umpires? Could you imagine two boxers fighting in a ring with no referee? I mean, you always need some type of arbiter, somebody who's fit, who's fair and looking at the rules and regulations to make sure that the marketplace or the economy or whatever goes according to the laws. And that's just part and parcel of the way things should be. Listen, Paul, I got to run. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Okay, listen, we're going to be back with more of the Freedom Lines. They're open, 1-866-987-8466.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, we're broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX, Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back here. We'll continue to chug along to the Freedom Express. The lines are open right now at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman today. And during the next few segments, we're going to continue honoring Martin Luther King Jr. As many of you now know, this is the 45th anniversary of his death. And what I've been doing throughout the program today is interspersing some audio clips that you might not have heard from Dr. Martin Luther King in the past. I know many people have heard the I Have a Dream speech, but there's a great body of work that exists out there that oftentimes you don't hear in the public domain. And that's what I'm trying to do today is share that with you. So that being said, let's go to some more of the callers right now. Next up is Paul on the line from Woodinville, Washington, listening on KBCS. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Mike. I wanted to go back and pick up on an analogy you made about regulation, and you said, and the body regulates. And I'm a kind of physiology guy, so I really like the analogy. So, and what I wanted to put out is most people don't understand what regulation is. Most people, especially Republicans, think that, regulation just means the government says you can't do it.
Right.
And when you talk about regulations, like, say, blood pressure, When blood pressure goes up, the body does something. It's a negative feedback loop. The body does something to reduce it, like your vasodilation. Your veins and arteries dilate somewhat to bring it down. Okay,
right. Like a seesaw, it goes up and down, but you want the seesaw to be right in the middle, equilibrium.
Right, and it doesn't mean that your blood pressure can't go up, otherwise you couldn't play tennis.
Correct.
It's within a range. And there are, of course, positive feedback things that have to do with mostly like body cavity clearing functions, like going to the bathroom or vomiting or birthing a baby. Right. And once the critical event has taken place, that like you can't stop. You know, it's like the more you feel you have to go, the more you have to go, and it builds and it builds. And
sure.
So this is not what we want in society. We don't want things where. Well, for instance, you don't want your when you turn your heat on, you don't want the warmer it gets, you don't want the furnace to go on more.
Right.
You want it to shut down. So
right. You don't want extremes. You don't want incredible highs, correct, or incredible lows. You want sort of an equilibrium with a little bit of up or down, but, you know, within a reasonable and that's exactly what regulations are supposed to do. No, listen,
right.
I agree.
So what happens is the right wing, they say, well, there hasn't been very many, you know, these statistically, we don't really have a lot of massacres. But I'm here to tell you that, you know, you only need to have one heart attack or stroke to let you know that your cardiovascular regulation is a little out of whack. You don't need to have six or eight of them because you're not going to last through those.
Right. No, it's a good point. But it's like you say, but look, we feel, many people, when you talked about the guns, et cetera, that when you look at what happened at that elementary school and you look at the 26 deaths in that one school, you look at the gun violence across the country, it's like we're having heart attack after heart attack after heart attack after stroke after stroke after stroke, and then not recognizing it and not doing anything about it.
They're not going to the doctor. They're just saying, oh, well, I felt bad again. And it's not that you don't have a right to eat fatty foods or have a right to have a cigarette once in a while or have a right to have a drink. But when things get out of control to where we're not in that steady state, in that happy medium, and if you don't recognize that 20 children being murdered is
a major symptom. No, I agree. Listen, well, I agree. Listen, well said. I appreciate it, Paul. Thanks a lot. That's Paul. A very good analogy there, and I like what he was talking about. That opens up another Freedom Line at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. I know we still got a bunch of people, Vince, Bruce, Charles, Jonna. Going to get to all you in a quick second, but I do want to play another clip from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and this one is called The Street Sweeper.
What I'm saying to you this morning, my friend, even if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, go on out and sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Handel and Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote portraits. Sweep streets so well that all the host of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. If you can't be a pine on the top of a hill, be a scrub in the valley, but be the best little scrub on the side of the rill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And when you do this, you've mastered the length of life.
Amen to that. See, again, I say to you that this, again, speaks directly to liberal progressive philosophy, because when you look at conservatives, you look at people like Paul Ryan, and you look at how they're protecting the rich, the wealthy, the affluent, and trying to sort of, you know, hoodwink the masses of people, saying that, guess what, one day this could be you. You could be rich. You could be wealthy. You could be a millionaire. When in reality, we know that only, you know, 0.5% of the country ever achieves that kind of financial success. So you see, that's what they're trying to push, that kind of propaganda on the American people, versus what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was saying here is, guess what? You might not be a Handel. You might not be a Beethoven. But you know what? Whatever you do, attack that job, that profession, that skill, with vigor and with energy and with excitement, and whatever it is that you do, do it the best that you could possibly do. And if you do that, if you give it your all, and who cares what it is? It could be menial labor, a menial job. It could be anything. But if you give it your best and you know in your heart you tried your best and you did your best, that's what's most important in life. It's not how much money there is on your tax return and how much money you made in a year. But again, a fundamental difference between liberalism and conservatism. They're all about the bottom line. They're all about monetary gains. That's not what we're about. We're about mastering, as he said, the length of life and enjoying what you do and taking pride in what you do. Again, a big difference between liberalism and conservatism.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back, my friends, to Freedom Express. Chugging along here, Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman here, the final half hour of the program. So let's get right back to the Freedom Lines. I think first up is Jana. She's listening on KBCS in Seattle, Washington. So, Jana, thank you for being patient, and welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, you bet. Thank you for inviting me to attend. This is a really great – I love this station. I listen every day. I want to recognize Alberta King, who is Martin Luther King Jr.'s mother. I'm a 53-year-old woman who just turned our last child out into the world in September and know the important role of motherhood. And I was just reading – I'll read this really quick sentence. Alberta King worked hard to instill self-respect into her three children. In an essay written at Crozer Seminary, Martin Luther King Jr. wrote that his mother was behind the scenes setting forth those motherly cares, the lack of which leaves a missing link in life. And I made a decision a few months back to not go back to school to get a therapy degree and to go back to what I believe is the foundation and the root of all humanity, no matter what you believe. Those are the seeds and those are our babies. And
amen to that.
I'm teaching Montessori school and we're instilling compassion, care, and kindness and respect. And, you know, that's all I have to say. I strongly believe that that's something that we really do need to look at a little bit more. I just wanted to speak on behalf too. I had heard something while I was waiting for you about welfare, the fat welfare mamas.
Right.
Those women are the most important resource we have that we can invest our time and our money in. Those are the women who are raising and steering the future humans that inhabit this earth. So basically that's just a cheerleading session for mothers, and I hope that people, you know, consider that to be an important role.
Absolutely. Well said, Jana. Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom with the listening audience.
You bet. Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye-bye now. Okay, there you have it. That's Jana from KBCS, as I said, in Washington, commenting on that. She talked about motherhood and those seeds and those children being sort of the root, the foundation of society as we know it. I agree 100%, but this is perhaps maybe the root or the foundation of all evil, and this is what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has to say about money.
And I still contend, America, that money can be the root of all evil. And I'm worried that too many people in America are more concerned about making a living than making a life. Yes, America, money can lead to exploitation. For they tell me that 0.1% of the population controls more than 50% of the wealth. Oh, America, how you've taken necessities from the masses to give luxuries to the classes. Your capitalism can be used very well. You can use it to wipe poverty from the face of the earth. You can use it to lift the whole level of humanity. You can lift it to make mankind come to the point that it is destined to come to. Your wealth can be used to a noble end. You have it at your disposal. Use it for that, America.
Again, amen to that. I mean, just incredible how he characterizes money and how there's a big difference between making a living versus making a life, and that we're giving, rather than necessities to the masses, we're giving luxury to the classes. And that probably is a good segue to talk to Vince, because Vince wants to talk about the Ryan budget and maybe it's being misinterpreted. And he's from Philadelphia, my hometown, Pennsylvania. So, Vince, welcome to the table.
Thanks. You know, I just wanted to say that, you know, I think that I lean Republican. And I'm assuming that a lot of the things you're saying about Republicans is the extreme right Republicans, because with all due respect, if not, I think that you fail to forget that there's an extreme left as well, which is not as good either.
Well, I disagree with that. But in any case, I don't know what the extreme left actually represents. But I know the extreme right is not a fringe group. It actually is the dominant factor and force of the Republican Party. And I think that's why you're seeing the Republican Party retreat on many issues right now, because they really are, if you want to call it the tail wagging the dog. But I don't think it's the tail wagging the dog. I think it is the dog. But in any case, go ahead. How's Ryan's budget being misinterpreted?
Well, you know, the thing about the Ryan budget is that to inform your listeners that if Martin Luther King was to read it, and he's a very intelligent guy, I think that he would agree with me that the Ryan budget offers an option. It does not get rid of Medicare. In fact, if the Ryan budget was to pass, it would basically not change anything other than provide off other options. If you want your Medicare the way it is, it doesn't change. If you want options in regards to your own well-being, then you have those options.
What kind of options? I mean, I'm a doctor, Vince, and I've studied the Ryan budget very carefully, and I see nothing but less options with the Ryan budget and moving more people out of government-funded subsidized health care into the private sector so that the private sector can ultimately make a lot more money off the sick and the suffering in this country. So tell me, what particular options does the Ryan budget offer that seniors don't have right now?
Well, before we get to that, I just want to...
No, not before we get to that. We have limited time here. So tell me what particular options that he's offering that a senior on Medicare right now doesn't have under the government-funded program. Give me the three top options that they don't have.
The first option, which most people will take, would be not to change anything. So what's wrong with that?
That's not an option. So that's not an option. Not changing anything is not an option.
No. The option is, if they do not want to take one of the other options, which is to take a voucher in order to shop around for your own insurance company, they can stay with the government-supplied Medicare, and that won't change anything.
Well, they don't need it. But see, all right, so what you're saying is he's willing to give vouchers, you know, coupons, like grandma has to cut out of a Sunday newspaper to go shop for health care. Right now, they have options. Right now, a senior could say, I'm going to stay in traditional Medicare and get a supplement and be done with it. Or they have options for Medicare Advantage or Medicare HMOs. They have tons of options right now. The only thing that you're saying is that he wants to take away their option to go right now and purchase health care from Medicare HMOs or Advantage plans by giving them a voucher and giving them less choice, because with a voucher you could only spend a certain amount of money and then you're exposed, versus in the current system they don't need a voucher and they can shop for whatever they want without have to paying anything out of their pocket. So that's not an option.
The biggest problem with what you're saying is your preference will not survive. That is not viable. It just will not.
What's not viable?
The option of today's Medicare system just is not viable.
Well, then maybe we need to offer them the option of a single payer health care where everybody can buy into the Medicare system. Medicare has only like 3-5% overhead versus a commercial HMO has 15-25% overhead, because most of that money goes into the pockets of the CEOs and the chief operating officer and the shareholders. So they want to profit off of somebody suffering in misery. And what Paul Ryan wants to do is to continue to put more money into the pockets of the private corporations and render less care to the people. And you even said it yourself, Vince, because you said he's giving them a voucher. He's giving them a coupon so that they only could purchase a certain limited amount of health care, so that limits the exposure of the private companies so they can make more money.
I agree with
you. Don't you understand that?
Yeah, I understand that. I do agree with the single payer. Unfortunately, it's not an option. But do you think that with the current system, as opposed to the Ryan system, that that seniors are going to get more?
Yeah, all you have to do in the system is exactly what the Affordable Care Act is doing right now, Vince. And if you really look at it objectively, President Barack Obama is saying to all the healthcare communities around the country, starting accountable care organizations, look, I want you to work together with the skilled nursing facilities, and I want you to work together, you know, with the hospitals, and I want the doctors to work together, and the patients to work together, and home health to work together, so that everybody works together providing the best quality of care so that patients stay well and healthy, versus each independent system, the hospital, hospitals trying to make as much money as they can, and they don't care what happens with home health, or home health trying to make as much money as they can, they don't care what happens with the diabetes, or, you know, and so on and so on. The problem is it's a fragmented, disjointed system right now, not working in unison, not working together, and everybody trying to make as much money as they can off of these patients without looking at the patient as the center. And that's what the Ryan budget plan is. That's what the Ryan plan for Medicare is to take even more money away from seniors, make them get more skin in the game, if you will, make them have fear of accessing the healthcare system, because that way there are going to be some financial penalties. And then guess what? When they don't access the system, Vince, all that's going to happen is they're going to get sicker and eventually end up in the emergency room or a hospital, and it's going to cost a lot more money, and that money's going to go into the for-profit corporation suffering, I mean, making money off of someone else's suffering. Listen, I got to run. I appreciate the dialogue, but thanks for calling in, really. Okay, that's Vince on the line from SiriusXM, and I'm going to get to the other callers here, too. Let me just play another clip here called Eternal Fool.
Probably gave his wife mink coats and convertible automobiles, but he didn't give her what she needed most, love and affection.
He gave her a voucher, though.
Probably provided bread for his children, but he didn't give them any attention. He didn't really love them. And so this man justly deserved his title. He was an eternal fool. He allowed the means by which he lived to outdistance the ends for which he lived.
Yeah. And there you have it in a nutshell. That's Paul Ryan. That's the Republican conservatives for you. They allow the means by which they live to outdistance the end for which you should be living. And that's the difference, again, between conservatives and liberals. We are at the center, at the core, moved by love and affection and attention and family and camaraderie and brotherhood. Versus conservatives, it's all about rugged individualism, selfishness, me, me, me. Big difference.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back, my friends. We're going to conclude here. The Freedom Express pulling up to its final stop, its final destination for today. And as many of you now know, Tom is out of the country. He's in Germany. He is participating in an event in for an organization called Salem International. If you want to learn a little bit more about it, just go to saleminternational.org. It is a non-denominational Christian not-for-profit welfare organization founded in 1957 by a gentleman of the name Gottfried Mueller, and they do incredible work. It's derived Salem from the word shalom, meaning peace, and everything that they do has to do with the shared values of peace and helping those in need and respect for life, which is exactly, quite frankly, what we're talking about today, honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the 45th anniversary of his untimely death. So I'm going to get to the Freedom Lines here in one quick second. I want to play one last quote here from Dr. Martin Luther King, and then we'll be taking your calls to close out the program for today. But this has to do with about being discouraged. I know oftentimes in life we feel down, we feel out, we feel as though we can't make a difference, we feel that the deck is stacked against us, and it's very easy to just get discouraged and not have faith and confidence in moving forward in what you want to do or what your dreams and aspirations are. So this is a very powerful clip about having that feeling of being discouraged.
Sometimes I feel discouraged.
Well,
sometimes as I move about dealing with the race problem, I feel discouraged.
Yeah.
Having to live every day under the threat of death, there are times that I feel discouraged.
Yeah.
Living with all kinds of abuse and criticism and misunderstanding, I feel discouraged sometimes.
Yeah.
I go on back and listen to all of that verse. Sometimes I feel discouraged and feel my works in vain, but then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again. There is a balm in Gilead. And
so I can sing that and another song comes to me. I've seen the lightning flash. I've heard the thunder roll. I've felt sin breakers dashing, trying to conquer my soul. But I heard the voice of Jesus stand still to fight on. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone.
All right, there it is about being discouraged. Okay, let me get to some of the last callers here right now. Let's go to Charles on the line from Chicago, Illinois. Charles, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Dr. Mike. You were discussing how Martin Luther King had made this eloquent statement about the about how our government is spending all this money on war.
Correct.
And not helping.
More on military defense than social uplift.
That brought to mind a something that was attributed in the movie Schindler's List to Oscar Schindler. His comment was, I owned and started all of these businesses, but what made me a success was war.
Right.
And he profiteered from the war, and then after the war, he basically, he could not run a business. And we're seeing that with a lot of these, the military-industrial complex. You know, that sure. Basically, they have all their eggs in one basket. They've not gone and done anything else other than try to create war for the last 5,500 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And war is a racket. So, you know, I agree. Listen, I appreciate you holding, Charles. Let me get some of the other calls. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, that's Charles from WCPT in Chicago, Illinois, listening in. Let's go next, I believe, to Sally on the line from Boise, Idaho. Sally, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Mike. I'm an RN, MS. And it's nice to question, but it's nice to see another person who believes in another form of medical purveyance.
Sure.
Than the old system. I've short comment that is causing my brain to want to explode, and that is that there are a lot of people who are quote pro-life who are also pro-death penalty.
Sure.
And how can they make that leap of logic that you can't get rid of two cells?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, basically, Sally, I appreciate what you're saying, and I agree. There seems to be sort of a difficulty in looking at that and saying that, hey, you're pro-life, but yet you're pro-death. And in
right.
reality, what they really are is they're pro-birth. They're not really pro-life, because after that baby's born, they could really care less what happens with the baby. And we know that. We see
right.
that in their public policies.
Even if the mothers would die giving
right.
birth.
No, absolutely. No, I agree, Sally. Well, listen, I appreciate your comment, and thanks for calling in, okay?
You have a
good day. That's Sally with Boise, Idaho. Listen, I think we're, you know, we still got Mark and Bruce and Joan and Steven. I'm not going to have time to actually get to everybody today. But listen, just so you know, we always keep these freedom lines open throughout the entire 3 hours of the program when I'm substituting for Tom. I will be in tomorrow, Friday, and then also next week, the entire week, with the exception of Tuesday. Tuesday, Tom will be broadcasting his regular show, but I will be in during those other days. So if you didn't get in today, just keep trying, and as you know, Tom always says, democracy is a participatory sport. Tag, you're it. And a special thanks to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. for all of his wisdom, all of his great spirit, his great energy. And he provides us hope that, indeed, tomorrow will be a better day. God bless, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.